Hello, my friends. Good evening or good morning. Sorry. Thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of JMAC Show Prep. This is the program where I read the stories with you. This is my first blush look at these stories, and you'll get my first blush response if I have one. And I would love your comments as well in the comments. So a lot to dive into today. And again, this is all just first blush. We'll go to the interwebs. We'll go to my news feeds, and we will see what we have to see. So we'll start out with COVID and COVID updates. This is, I think, a very important story. And by the way, I didn't do this on purpose, but a lot of the stories today are from ABC News. So I could be a slave to ABC. I could be a sheep. You never know. But that's where they are from today. I'm sure other days it will be from other sources. So this is a screaming banner headline for me. Merck agrees to let other drug makers make its COVID pill. What? Now, I can't wait to hear the conspiracy theories around this one. I can't wait to hear people, you know, justify this away, because that's what I heard when people said that ivermectin is being downplayed so that the pharmaceuticals can create brand new drugs that they can make more money off of. And it turns out that Merck sells ivermectin, and I'm like, okay, all right. Again, that's all suspicion, all these little breadcrumbs that conspiracy theorists follow. Let's read the story. What is their possible motivation? And by the way, some people will just never, ever accept that a business does things for the right reasons sometimes. They will never, ever accept that. So here's the story. This is out of London. Pharmaceutical company Merck agreed to allow other drug makers to produce its COVID-19 pill in a move aimed at helping millions of people in poorer countries get access to the potentially life-saving drug. This is a United Nations-backed public health organization said on Wednesday. The medicine's patent pool said in a statement that it had signed a voluntary licensing agreement for molnupiravir with Merck and its partners, Ridgeback Biotherapies. I need to make this a little bit bigger for those of you who are reading this along with me. There you go. That looks better. Let's see. And those of you on the podcast, you don't care. But if you were watching on Facebook or YouTube or Instagram or on LinkedIn, you will be able to read along with me. So the agreement will allow the medicine's patent pool to grant further licenses to qualified companies who are approved to make the drug. Neither drug maker will receive royalties under the agreement for as long as the World Health Organization deemed COVID-19 to be a global emergency. What is going on here? Please, conspiracy theorists out there, please tell me. What is it? What am I missing now? What is the motive here? Charles Gore, the executive director of the medicine's patent pool, said the early results for molnupiravir were compelling, and that he hoped this first voluntary licensing agreement for a COVID-19 treatment would lead to others. Despite repeated requests from governments and health officials, no vaccine makers have agreed to a similar deal. A hub set up by the WHO in South Africa intended to share messenger RNA vaccine recipes and technologies has not enticed a single pharmaceutical company to join. Merck has requested its pill be licensed by both the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the European Medicines Agency. Decisions that could come within weeks. Merck reported this month that their pill cut hospitalizations and deaths by half among patients with early symptoms of COVID-19. The results were so strong that independent medical experts monitoring the trial recommended stopping it early. an antiviral pill that people could take at home to reduce their symptoms and speed recovery, could prove groundbreaking, easing the crushing caseload on hospitals and helping to curb outbreaks in more countries with weak healthcare systems. It would also bolster a two-pronged approach to the pandemic: treatment by way of medication and prevention, primarily through vaccinations. The charity Doctors Without Borders welcomed the agreement Merck struck to share its COVID-19 pill, but said it didn't go far enough. The license excludes key upper middle income countries like Brazil and China from its territory, they say, where there are strong established capacity to produce and supply antiviral medicines. That's a senior legal and policy advisor at Doctors Without Borders who called the deal disappointing. So that is an interesting perspective for sure. So, interesting headline. Again, I can't wait to hear the conspiratorial spin on this one. I'm sure they have some ulterior motive. If you think you know what the ulterior motive is, put it in the comments and let's see what other people think about that. All right, moving on to the next one. We've all been watching, or I've been watching, Washington, D.C. Hang on, my camera got out of whack. Something is wrong with the software that I'm using. Every time I change scenes now, the camera goes squampus. It may be another piece of software that I'm using because I'm recording using two different Macs, and I'm using this piece of software to connect the screens. My mouse moves from one screen to the other, from one Mac to the other. You know, like universal control, like Mac is supposed to be releasing here anytime. And I think that that has something to do with it. Not sure, but I think. Okay, let's see. Family leave hangs in the balance as Democrats scramble to close social spending deal. Federal paid family leave is likely out of the Biden social spending bill. Democrats on Wednesday scrambled to close the deal on President Joe Biden's landmark social spending legislation. Again, reading from ABC News. Focusing on new ways to pay for the package, including a billionaire's tax, the White House said the president supports. At the same time, they were hoping to make enough progress that House progressives would agree to vote for a separate Senate-passed bipartisan infrastructure bill before Biden heads overseas on Thursday. But as they struggle with how to pay for the package, some are frustrated with what's being cut. Federal paid family and medical leave is likely out of the Build Back Better social spending bill. That's according to two sources. A major blow to some progressives who have fought for this provision. Progressives late Thursday decried to reporters the potential of paid family and medical leave being cut from the final social spending bill. I'm not comfortable voting on this bipartisan bill, Representative Jamal Bowman, Democrat of New York, said. He says, I need to see a very, 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 very strong framework with strong assurances from the president to even consider it. I'm really pissed off, he said, that paid leave seems to be falling from the wayside. Let's see what else. Fellow progressive Representative Cori Bush said cutting paid family leave is unjust to the people, and said that they had already compromised to reduce paid family leave to 4 weeks, which he said is still not enough. ABC News congressional correspondent Rachel Scott squarely asked Congressional Progressive Caucus Chair Rep Pramila, I'm sorry, I'm so bad with names. You can read it there. Representative Pramila Jayapal, Democrat, Washington, if a deal is within reach. The senator said, well, I would ask the two senators that we're waiting on because we've all been working very hard to get there. And Senator Manchin is one of the ones who is not coming along for the ride. There's a couple of things just off the top of my head here. You know, if the federal government wants to provide paid family leave to federal employees, then knock yourself out. But if you want to require that employers provide paid family leave, I think I'm going to have an issue with that. And the reason for that is because these are unfunded mandates. And something that Democrats really like to do is they want to provide you with benefits, but they don't want to pay for them. They want the employer to pay for them. And this, in my opinion, is wrong, and it ultimately hurts the employee more than it helps them. And there's a long history with Democrats wanting to do this and not understanding the unintended consequences of their actions. And again, it depends on the size of the business, but when you say, I want to provide this benefit or I want to provide that benefit, you know what? If you want to fight for the federal government to provide those benefits using tax dollars, then knock yourself out. But making employees more expensive to employers is not going to help the economy. It is not going to help people in the long run. I mean, I just give you an example that I give all the time of unintended consequences. The Affordable Care Act, when they said that anybody above a certain number of hours has to receive benefits. And businesses said, this is crazy. And I was in Texas saying, this is unbelievable. It's not sustainable. And they said, oh, it'll be fine. And they honestly believed that that's what was going to happen. They put in their numbers that many more people would have health insurance because all they had to do was pass a bill. And then businesses would just magically afford it. Well, what I said was going to happen is what happened. Businesses cut full-time employees to part-time. That's what happened. And I think four members of my family at the time were full-time. And then all of a sudden, they had to be part-time. They didn't have benefits when they were full-time. And they didn't get benefits when they were part-time. So here we go again. Democrats trying to help people, but not understanding the unintended consequences. We need to stop looking at employers as a charitable piggy bank for all of your issues. If you want to provide it, if you think it's important, then tax everybody and pay for it out of the federal coffers. That way the burden is not on employers, and that way employees don't become more expensive to employers. Just my thoughts here on congressional paid leave. Okay, the next one, I think an important story here. This is a judge. This is in a Southwest Airlines case. Says that Southwest Airlines is within its rights to require employees to get vaccinated against COVID. Again, we, for some reason in our society, people have all of a sudden come to a belief that none of their rights or freedoms are ever being taken away, that we are a truly free society. We never have been. We never will be, nor should we ever be. And states have rights, and businesses have rights, and employees have rights. And they all find circumstances when they butt up against each other. But a state has a right to issue a mandate, and an employer has a right to issue a mandate. And an employee or a state citizen has a right to say no, but they may possibly face the consequences. That's the way it works. And I could spend an hour here going on and listing all of the places where your rights are taken on a regular basis. And, you know, people didn't really complain about it before. But now all of a sudden, everybody's become an epidemiologist. Everybody's become a constitutional expert in the last year and a half. And if they're sitting there saying that their employer cannot mandate this, then they don't get the Constitution. And the other side that's so frustrating to me is it's conservatism that should be pro-business rights. And it's conservatism that's saying, or Republicans that are saying, that there should be no mandates from businesses. Our own Chris Stewart here in the state of Utah, I'm not going to go to a Utah Jazz game because of their blah, 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 vaccine mandate. Chris, buddy, I thought conservatives were pro-business rights. I thought conservatives believed that, hey, you know, you can deny service to somebody, maybe even if they ask you to bake a cake for their gay wedding. I thought that we were in favor of business rights. But now when there's a political hot potato and you can score fundraising points by acting like suddenly this is an outrage instead of propping up and supporting the business rights that conservatism says you should, now suddenly we're on the other side of it. And guess what? Being on the other side of it, you're on the other side of the Constitution and you don't even know it. This is supposed to be show prep. I'm supposed to get to the story. I'm just responding to the headline. So let's dive into the story. Okay, this is Dallas. Again, ABC News again. They win the day. A federal judge has rejected a bid by pilots to block Southwest Airlines from imposing a vaccine mandate, saying the airline is within its power to require vaccinations as a safety measure. U.S. District Judge Barbara Lynn denied the request by the airline's pilot union to issue a temporary restraining order against the airline's requirements. The judge said Tuesday that Southwest is within its authority to require vaccinations to improve safety and maintain its operations. Southwest Airlines asks its employees to get vaccinated against COVID-19 to comply with a Biden administration requirement for federal contractors, including airlines that have contracts with the government. In recent days, the airline has weakened the requirement by saying workers who fail to comply won't be fired. Southwest has openly encouraged employees to ask for a medical or religious exemption. Oh my gosh. Don't openly ask them to get a medical or religious exemption. I mean, don't. Mike, that is so frustrating. It is so frustrating that people are using religion to get out of state requirements or business requirements. They're using they're using chiropractors. Anybody who has any type of doctor or, you know, whatever it is, to get a medical exemption. Don't encourage people to do that. They can find out on their own. Dallas-based Southwest is giving employees until November 24th to provide proof of vaccination or request an exemption. You know, as a member of the LDS Church, we believe that you're supposed to, you know, honor and support the government, follow the laws. And then people are rushing in trying to get medical exemptions for this COVID vaccine or this mandate, when the very church itself has come out and asked everybody to mask up and to get vaccinated. And they're trying to get a religious exemption. It goes against everything. It goes against the idea that you're supposed to follow the laws, and it goes against the ideas that you're supposed to follow the prophet. It's like, you're wrong coming and going. And it goes against Christianity that says you're supposed to love your neighbor. The whole thing is just mind-boggling to me. Absolutely mind-boggling. Okay, what else do I have here? Redistricting. We had on the redistricting, the head of the redistricting legislative committee several weeks ago, and they are going through their process. They've been traveling the state. They've been asking people to draw maps. And then you have the redistricting commission that was set up by the ballot initiative in the state of Utah. And I've been telling you that there is a confrontation coming, because the redistricting committee that is not affiliated with the legislative redistricting committee has come up with some proposed maps. And one of those maps, I guess those maps, all of them together, have a district in there that is clearly going to put a Democrat in office. And they're presenting this as their, you know, as their maps. And the question is the legislative commission going to even consider these maps? They're under no requirement to do so. So what happens when this committee that was put together presents their maps and the legislature turns them down? What do the people of Utah do? This will be an interesting question. But this is about the, there has been some controversy around the Independent Redistricting Commission. This is, where what am I reading here? Okay, Deseret News. With a booklet of a dozen printed maps lying on a table nearby, Utah Independent Redistricting Commission Chairman Rex Facer said he felt confident with the works of the commission despite many hardships over the past few months. The first commission of its kind in Utah, whose work was stalled by months as a result of lengthy delays of the 2020 census data, essentially wrapped up work Monday by voting to complete three congressional maps it will propose to a committee of state legislators next week, along with state legislative and school board members. Those maps are now available for everyone to see online. Our maps have really turned out quite well, Facer said in a Tuesday press conference, adding they've scored well among partisan bias computer analysis conducted by the Princeton Gerrymandering Project. The commission has really tried to insulate itself from partisan data, so we've tried to stay away from those kinds of things. He added that the commission ended up receiving over 2,000 public comments regarding their maps and 250 other comments regarding redistricting issues. Another 1,000 public comments were received regarding communities of interest. These comments have shaped our work and improved the maps we've drawn, Facer added. We've been faithful to our criteria. The six commissioners also on Tuesday stood by their 12 total maps, even after one of the commissioners, former Utah Congressman Rob Bishop, blasted the commission for its map-creating processes as he abruptly quit the commission. Facer said he is saddened by Bishop's departure and words about the commission. However, he said the commission is able to move on without Bishop. The chairman added he believes all 12 designs selected by the commissioners are high-quality maps that follow the guidelines outlined by Utah law. Let's see. So this talks about how the commission was formed. And then more about Bishop's exodus. Monday's meeting, as exciting as it was for the commission, was mostly overshadowed by Rob Bishop's abrupt departure. He cited differences in the congressional mapping process, such as the possibility of avoiding urban-rural districts and other issues tied to private and public lands. What I'm telling you is I'm frustrated with the process, and I'm frustrated with what I am hearing. Frustrated with where we are going, because this commission is designed not to work, Bishop said during the commission's meeting. I respect each of you as an individual, but I'm sorry, as a group, we suck. Wow. Facer said Tuesday he disagrees with that view. He believes the commission has tremendous value in Utah's redistricting process, adding that the commission took steps to ensure the maps were designed in a very transparent way. The commissioners added that Bishop left before the commission voted to adopt a map, and that had a map that had a very high urban-rural mix. Facer says, we tried to present the legislature with some different approaches that were all good maps, that all met the other criteria that we had. So you can just feel it. You can feel a clash coming. You can see it a mile away. These maps created by the redistricting committee, the independent redistricting committee, will be presented, and then we'll see what the legislature has come up with. What do you think the odds are that they're going to be very, very different? In fact, maybe, just for kicks and giggles, I have my Magic 8-Ball here. There you go. Magic 8-Ball, gifted to me by the one and only Amy Iverson. I asked the Magic 8-Ball what's going to happen, and here is the response from the Magic 8-Ball. The Independent Redistricting Commission has come up with at least one district that can be won by Democrats. the legislative committee, according to my Magic 8-Ball, will come up with 4 districts that cannot be won by a Democrat. You want to put money on it? You want to see what happens? Well, we'll know soon enough, but that's my guess. And then you're going to have people screaming and crying foul. You're going to have all these news stories about it. And the whole reason, the whole point of setting up an independent commission, it'll go out the door. Now, I supported the commission, but I said the entire time, I think we're creating a conflict if the commission's wishes or recommendations aren't mandated, because the legislature is going to do what they want. The only thing I can tell you is that if the legislature does what they want and you disagree with it, then the way to respond to that is with your vote. And that may be exactly what we have to do. All right, just a few more stories here in the JMAC update that I haven't read yet. Where am I going? I got to look at the right screen here. This is about Apple. Most of you know I'm kind of an Apple fanboy. I live in the Apple ecosphere. I run this show off of an M1 Mac Mini. I would love to get one of the new MacBook Pros, but I just can't afford them right now. Unless you want to donate, we could do a fundraiser so you could help me buy a MacBook Pro. Go to jmcfarland.com and join the JMAC Club, as little as $5 a month. You get great perks, and then maybe I can add a MacBook Pro to the show. No, I wish it was that way. I use your donations to pay for all of these streaming services and to pay some of my bills. So thank you for being a member. But anyway, these MacBooks came out and they seem to have resolved a lot of the complaints about the MacBooks, that the ports had gone away, the HDMI ports had gone away, the touch bar was a joke. Just all of these issues. And here it is that Apple has really come around and, from all reviews, made an incredible product and a chipset that is very, very hard to compete with. But just like Apple, they just, you know, to me, it's like they do so many amazing things and then they go off and do something that is just ridiculous or that isn't implemented properly. I'll give you an example. The Apple TV remote control until their most recent edition. The thing is a joke. I can't pick it up or hold it without it changing or doing something on the TV. It is a joke. And for Apple to have released that thing, I mean, that thing is a joke and has been for a long time. And I'll give you another example. In fact, maybe I can show it to you here if I go to the right camera. Let me see if I have the ability to do this. This is something brand new that I'm going to try. Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. All right, so if you can see this, and forgive me, you know that I shake, but this is the Magic Mouse. Now, the Magic Mouse is an ingenious mouse. You can swipe right and left. That changes desktops. You can scroll up and down. There's no buttons. I love all of that. Now, if you haven't seen the Magic Mouse and you're listening on the podcast, I apologize you can't see this, but go to the Facebook page or the YouTube page and you'll be able to see it. So here it is with the Magic Mouse. What do you do when you need to charge the thing? Well, I'll give you an example. Here's the keyboard, the Apple keyboard, and when I need to charge that, see there's a port right on the back, and I take my Lightning cable, and I plug that right into the port, and I can keep using the keyboard while I am typing and while I'm charging it. Well, where is the port on the Magic Mouse? It's on the bottom. It's right there. There's absolutely no way to use this thing and charge it at the same time. And it seems like every year Mac does something like this, Apple does something like this, and it's just mind-blowing that they will do something. They do such amazing things and they pay such close attention to form and to function. And then they'll do something like this. So why do I share all this with you? Well, because now in these latest MacBooks, there's something called the notch. The notch is the same thing you have on your Apple iPhone. And it's the camera notch. And when I saw the camera notch, I didn't think too much of it because it just takes up part of the top menu bar. So you actually gain more real estate. And I'm like, you know, I don't have anything that would be showing in that notch. So it's not going to bother me. So I had no problem with the notch. But then I thought about it, and I've been watching all of these posts and reviews. These MacBook Pro screens are smaller than all of the screens that I use. So on the screens that I use for most of my daily stuff, that notch wouldn't bother anything. But it's getting in the way of menu items for people who are using the MacBook. And so either the developers haven't caught up with it yet, or Mac has just said, hey, you're on your own. And so people are saying, how is this even shippable? So what's happening is menu items are appearing behind the notch. I thought, you know, the way Mac would do this or Apple would do this is they would have something in their program that would push that menu item over to one side or the other. No, they don't. It just sits in the background. Now, I'm sure this is something that they will fix over time, but for now, it is a problem. And for a lot of MacBook Pro users, they're very frustrated. If you are thinking about upgrading to a MacBook, you might want to wait until this changes, till somehow developers catch up. And I don't even know if it's a developer issue. Can they control where the menus appear? I don't think they can. I don't think Apple gives them that ability. So if you're waiting, if you're thinking about buying, you might want to wait. And to my friend Chris, who has already purchased and already received, and yes, I'm jealous, please let me know if you are frustrated with the notch. All right, that is it, my friends. That is your JMac show prep for the day. Funny how much commentary I can come up with when I'm just reading stories. But I'd love your comments. Please like, share, and subscribe, and also comment. And please go to jmcfarland.com and become a member of the JMac Club. As little as $5 a month will help me to continue to bring this product to you on a regular basis. With that, thank you so much, everybody. I hope that you have a wonderful day. And if there are other types of stories you want me to cover in the JMac update, please let me know.